Let's first introduce our guest for this evening. In front of me is Maya Vestermorel, who is soon starting at the Berkman Center, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
And what are you going to do there over there?
I'm going to approach the dimension and the economical importance of common base grid production.
Which ties in neatly with the theme for tonight.
I am also promoting a digital commons global forum, which is going to be in Barcelona in October.
I will give you some speaking time on that as well, Maya, later on.
Okay.
Next one is Peter Sander, the worst internet criminal of all times, according to Tim Kuik.
Oh, yeah.
That guy, is he still alive?
Last time I saw him, he was pretty drunk, and yeah.
Oh, yeah, he usually is pissed out of his mind, but, you know.
He's quite fun to hang out with, especially when he pays the beer for me.
Yeah, do you know what his last name means in Swedish?
I've heard it was something rather obscene.
Yeah, it's the male genital, but in the slang form that you shouldn't speak on radio. So when you said it, I was thinking in Swedish, and, you know, you said the word that you're not allowed to say in Swedish radio.
So, well...
But it describes him perfectly, so, you know, he's got a good name.
He's not such a dick. He's quite fun. He's on the wrong side. He's on the dark side, in my opinion. But, yeah, if he's like Gaddafi, very entertaining.
But he's one of these guys that people talk a lot about, and I don't really care about him or for him, but I don't really care about him. He has his work, and it's stupid, and, you know, he tries to do it, and we ignore him. That's good.
Okay. Well, next to him is kind of... part of the show furniture, it's Mario McCarthy.
Yeah,
a very nice piece of show furniture, not worn out at all.
Yeah, I haven't been used enough. Yes, okay, so yes, I'm hanging out with criminals again, second night running, okay, so...
You're the guy who's causing me to be tapped by the intelligence service, probably.
By the which?
The Dutch intelligence service is probably tapping me because I know you.
Well, they should have been tapping you a long time ago.
I'm boring, trust me. Then we have Becky.
Hey.
Becky Hugger, author of Barefoot...
Barefoot into Cyberspace, yeah. Just came out a week ago. I just sold out here at the...
This is a bloody shame. I wanted to get a signed copy of it. I started reading on the Creative Commons PDF download, which I put on my e-reader on the way here, and it's a good book.
Hey, thanks.
Get it. Download it. Probably Becky wants it to buy it.
Yeah, buy it.
And then we have...
the second piece of furniture.
Well, you haven't only been once on the show. It made a rather lasting impression on quite a few people, though. Especially given your state of intoxication at the end of the ordeal. But it's Jaramil from...
Cyberspace.
Jaramil, can you do me a favor? And say, it's a me, Jaramil.
It will end up in the soundboard.
Come on.
It's a me, Jaramil.
Thank you very much.
I think we wrote internet history already.
Oh, and then we have Steph from the Hackerspace in Budapest.
Hi. Yeah, I'm from Budapest, but basically I'm just living there. I consider myself part of the internet. And I just have a local copy here and I'll download it.
He's the most famous anonymous guy I've ever heard about.
It's true. I can confirm.
But since he's part of the internet, we probably can scan his open ports now.
Well, there's a lot of ports to be scanned. I don't even know what that means, but it was funny.
Yeah. Okay. On my left-hand side, there's Thomas, who is all going to frame this in proper cultural anthropology.
Blah, blah, blah. Yeah.
Already. This is not good.
I think maybe my other name is better. Social hack.
Social hack. So this is social engineering at all. And shifting the registers is GMC. And I think I'll throw in some music now. I'm on laptop number one, GMC.
I'm always so happy with your preparation, and I get the proper schedule beforehand and the playlist and all.
Well, the times I provided it doesn't work either, so why bother?
True. making a short news announcement, trying to hijack the show. There will be a liftoff of a stratosphere twin balloon. Oh, that's today. Next to the runway facing south, Das Labor. They were hacking along and will fly a stratosphere SC. And on board are a HD TV camera, a GPS unit, an APRS unit, as well as a temperature and air pressure sensor set. The total payload weighs 800 grams. A piggyback payload from the CubeSat team is also included, which was hacked out of a commercial digital compass. Come and join the team. Launch window is set for 23:30.
Sebastian, from his album Transparent Moments, it's called Memories. Bloody hell, nice iTunes again.
Yeah, you always keep playing. I want to ask a question though. You always wait until the song is over and then you talk. Is it because if you talk through it, it will be a derived work and you will not be able to put it in your CC by, you know, with the share alike?
So that is share alike, and as far as I'm concerned, we do CC by SA and I couldn't care less. It could be CC0 as far as I'm concerned.
Don't forget you're talking to a lawyer.
But to be honest, I can't answer your question. I haven't really thought this through yet. But it's an interesting matter, because if so, then any radio show which talks through music will produce derived works, and that will probably be unauthorized anyway.
Yep.
So the most broadcasting radio stations will be a bloody bunch of pirates. And they should be hung then.
Where did you say you left your Nerf gun?
I can see that. I can see Peter sweating here.
Can you pass it to me?
No, that's just so hot in here. Because you're here.
Yes.
Anyway, a tiny piece of news. The BART, the Bay Area, I don't think what the R stands for. The transit.
Rail, maybe?
Rapid transit.
Yeah, rapid transit. Although it's not very known for its rapid speed.
That's what it's called.
Yeah.
Because BART would be silly.
Yes. The people were staging protests because of the behavior of their police officers. And that was coordinated through smartphones. And then BART responded by shutting down mobile networks in 4 stations in the network.
Where, in Syria?
No, that was San Francisco.
Oh, you mean the land of the free and the brave?
Precisely.
Oh, okay.
Oh, I guess there's no one from the U.S. on this panel.
Lack of trying, though.
No.
But Nick is now tasting the flesh pots of Berlin. So
yeah, Dimitri couldn't be here.
He's Canadian. He's Canadian.
Oh, yeah.
Dimitri I was missing.
Sorry.
Yeah.
I understand most of them fear traveling at this point.
And by the way, Jeremy hasn't shown up yet.
Yeah, where
he's
is
been
he?
Missing all day.
Yeah, we've been looking for him, but he's not.
Jeremy, if you're out there, let us know you're safe.
But, Jeremy, what are your thoughts on that? San Francisco now becoming an official third world hellhole.
I think the conflict for the freedoms that are given by the internet to the people are everywhere. And it's a deterritorialization of that kind of conflict that we see also in Syria and also in San Francisco. It's a sign.
I wonder if there's a coincidence with the medical marijuana legislation in California. What have they been smoking, you know?
Yeah, that's a good
and
point.
Did they reserve some of that for us?
No, I would say either explanation is probably bollocks. It's just incompetent civil servants.
Oh,
I mean, the same kind of thing's been happening in England now with the riots that have been going on, and David Cameron talking about shutting down access to social networks and such for known rioters. So it's the exact same trend all over again.
Although I would say, I'm being the devil's advocate here, shutting down access to social networks for known rioters instead of pulling the plug on the internet in whole areas is fairly moderate response.
But on the other hand, being a known rioter is not the same as being a convicted criminal, and as long as there's no incitement to violence, there's no justification in limiting free speech.
But it would be the kind of a digital ASBO. ASBO being the antisocial behavior. What's the O, Becky? You're British.
Oh, I was trying to keep quiet on this. It's shaming. It's shaming. I think there's a fundamental misunderstanding about the status of communications networks by the kinds of legislators that choose to switch them off at moments like this. I mean, there is still in countries like the US and the UK at least a narrative of acceptance of the right to protest. But I just think on the part of legislators that they clearly don't understand these communications networks are a fundamental part of that right. And that's why they think that it's acceptable, you know, to continue signed on to like key UN declarations and behave in this way. So in a part it is incompetence, but a kind of intellectual incompetence perhaps.
And I think this also underlines the need for some technical countermeasures like deploying resilient communication infrastructure, creating this, building this, preparing for when the internet gets shut down by some dictator in, you know,
England.
Egypt or some other country.
That was exactly the thing, that in Egypt, when they shut off the internet, everyone was so upset. Even in the UK, they were all saying, this is bad, this is bad, this is not a democracy. And yes, it's this us versus them mentality, that we are never doing anything wrong because we're a democracy. But they're not a democracy. They are poor people, or they are over there, so they don't understand.
It's just not fascism when we do it.
You know,
exactly.
The State Department is handing out a shitload of money for creating such an infrastructure. Maybe we should divert some of that money to London.
Yeah, and San Francisco. I mean, come on.
Yeah, of course.
So you're actually kind of advocating a new Marshall Plan.
Did you hear the news that there was some high-level Iranian official who offered to send peacekeeping troops into London?
Yeah, he called on the monarchical regime of the UK to exercise restraint.
Yes.
that beats Gaddafi showing solidarity with the London demonstrators and London the stage solidarity protests in Tripoli for that. But
I think someone has his phone still on.
Yeah. Oh,
is there actually anyone here with a phone? That is kind of surprising after, you know, I wouldn't keep my phone on here because it would be rooted in 2 minutes or something at this place.
Actually, it's a testament to the quality control of Apple that my iPhone hasn't been rooted, at least not visibly.
Well, how do you know?
Well, that's quality control of the people that made the rootkit that you haven't noticed it yet.
I just assume everything is rooted, so.
Yeah.
I would like to add something to the discussion. In the case of the Spanish Revolution, this recently mobilization since the 15th of May in Spain, is that the element that the people is experimenting themselves, how, for example, their Facebook group is being cut down, it's much more powerful than any kind of campaign explaining about censorship.
Oh,
and
right.
This is connected with the huge escalation of the migration of people to alternative social network sites, like N-Mains1. Like, people just previously wouldn't believe you until they experimented, and this is like connected. We are seeing also like people saying, okay, we need something else, and they just do it.
Yeah, I'd like to carry this notion of the extreme consequences of certain types of thought as an excellent way of advocating some stuff to free culture and copyright, the copy fight which is going on after the music, which will be Bertie Cox, and the song is Funny Day.
We'll be right back.
Pay some freaking attention, Walter. The music is over. You're on the air again.
Okay, there we are.
We have a show here. Oh. Bobby no. Yeah. What a mess, Walter. What a mess.
Well, my responsibility.
So is my life. Today I found out that my birthday is also the day the GNU project was announced, and this explains so much.
It does.
Well, anyway, to carry on Maya's remark that people will only be convinced when they see the bad things happening that have been prophesized before, to put it that way. I would like to get back to free culture and the copyright fights, and actually, I'm very fond of the notion of the content industry shooing individual consumers for downloading, because I don't think the only way this war can end is with, well, a little bit of bloodshed here and there, if the people are convinced this model is outdated and can't go on, and that will only happen when we have lots of sad and innocent victims.
Well, that doesn't actually scale very well, because the individuals who are being sued are having a lot of big hits. They take a very large hit in that kind of lawsuit. And frankly, we as the free culture movement haven't been good enough about bringing attention to their individual cases. So maybe we need to put up some kind of advocacy site or something like that about the individual. What is this mix about the individual kind of cases that are going on?
I actually don't agree, because that gives them focus on what's actually going on. So when they sue people, they do it for the press. They don't do it for anything else. Mm. They don't care about the money. They only want to have that attention that they get with that. So I say let them sue, and then we just ignore it until they die, because they have no money left. And they say they lose money all the time. So yeah, sure, in 10 years, they're dead. They have no money left, or in the end they have to change in order to make more money. And I think the only way to speak with the copyright industry is to make them bleed in terms of money, mostly.
I'd really like to hear other people's views on this, because obviously we've got people from like a spread of different countries and sharing cultures around the table. But I think there's a fundamental tension between people in the free culture movement and the people who are the targets of these lawsuits. These people who, I mean, there are innocent victims, but there are also people who are using peer-to-peer file sharing. And there are some advocacy situations where aligning yourself with those people seems counterproductive in the free culture movement. And I just want to know if that's the same experience around the table, if advocates have naturally aligned themselves with illicit file sharers, or if there's ever been a move to distance themselves in order to, for example, get things like open data mandates or encourage cultural institutions to adopt Creative Commons licenses, and that's those sort of soft activities that happen around the free culture movement.
So to make that a kind of shorter question,
sorry,
should the free culture movement stand up for people who are being sued for copyright violation?
I would say, well, you can't make a blanket statement saying yes or no on this.
That's why we have a debate.
To get back to Becky's question, personally, I don't align myself with the infringers, the genuine infringers. I'm not talking about cases like the Dutch artist who used the Louis Vuitton bag in
a
painting.
Sure, sure.
This is an entirely different kind of case. And by the way, a brilliant illustration how so-called intellectual property rights are a problem in the free speech context. But I personally, I would say, and in that sense, I align with Peter Sinde. I never thought it would be possible. I'm much more of the opinion, well, if you don't accept the prices of CDs, DVDs, or whatever mass entertainment you prefer in the shops, don't buy it, and get to Creative Commons music, get to independent games, and just step out of that.
But it's not that easy, actually, because if you go for the alternatives, it's often peer pressure that makes you listen to a certain type of music. So if your friends are listening to, let's say, Kanye West, you want to listen to that as well. So that has nothing to do with the music itself. It has to do with the message you're getting from all of the radio stations, all of the TV, because that's an identity that you want. So people are not always buying into the music because of the music, but they're buying in because it's their friends are listening to the same thing. So it's a cultural thing. So we need to change that rather than saying you have to listen to something else, because that's saying to a 12-year-old kid you can't wear that brand of jeans because it's too expensive. It doesn't work that way.
Yeah, but basically what we're talking about, this is the entertainment industry's marketing departments, no?
Yeah.
Those are
yeah.
The marketing departments are the ones that are shaping our demands or needs.
There's this great game that I copied once called Civilization, and the fifth version, Civilization 5, one of the most...
Sid Meier is a great guy. Yeah.
There's no megalomania whatsoever at the table, by the way.
No, but this game, there is one of the most powerful things you can invent, and that's the Hollywood, because then you rule other nations' culture, and that's very true. It didn't make that just because it's fun. That's actually true. Hollywood creates and controls every country's culture.
Hollywood has a ring that binds them all, basically.
Yeah, it has that ring that they are making movies about all the time.
However, to answer your question, Becky, I think it wouldn't make any sense. It would be very stupid to take distance from certain kinds of sharing and certain others, because simply it is all about the same thing, about the fact that the digital dimension let us share. And it's a very natural thing, and the legislations have to be adapted to this new dimension. It's an immanent process, which translated in cheap words, it's unstoppable. You have to just take in account the fact that sharing has changed in the third millennium, the way, the possibilities, and we can even build a better world out of it. So it doesn't make sense to take distance from those that share in a way or another, because it's just like, you know, targeting the antisocial behavior, which leads to a very painful chain of standing points in which you judge people, actually. Mm. So
we have a genuine copyright abolitionist in our midst?
Yes.
Where?
Here.
Oh, hi. Two.
Actually, I don't even care about copyright. So it's not about abolishing copyright. Just ignore it. It's a totally different thing.
So that means also you ignore the GNU GPL license, right?
Well, actually, that is a license that restricts me, but that's going into meta discussions almost.
Oh, right.
No. That is a license that was able to give space to all this movement at
it
large.
It does, but it's still in the end. It's still in the end. You have something which might also be a problem because, you know, it's still a license that restricts the use you can do with it. That goes for every type of license there is, because it is a license. It is a restriction on the material itself, and it might not seem as a big problem, and it's a less of a problem than the current copyright regime, but it might be a problem that we're creating in the end. And I'm not saying that we shouldn't go for that, and we should just go and drop everything and go for no copyright, all of that. It's better, but it's less worse.
Can I bait the abolitionists? Could I have permission to bait the
Yes, of
the
course. I'm always, always very much in favor of baiting and troll baiting and all
okay,
that.
Okay, cool.
Problem?
So I just want to put forward the suggestion that you guys are looking at the wrong problem, right? I don't think copyright is the problem. I think the way the market is operating is the problem. So I put to you that there's a future where the market, where copyright still exists, but the market operates in a completely different way, maybe based on regulation, maybe based on the kind of norms that Jérôme was talking about, and that suddenly copyright's not a problem. I'm putting it that you're looking at the wrong problem. What do you say?
Let me add to this. I think there's... I'm speaking. everyone's looking in the wrong direction. I forgot what I wanted to say.
You forgot right, it. What?
That's a wonderful question, but it's wrong, right? Pointing at the markets and saying, oh, wait, there is a problem with the markets is kind of like saying, it would be really wonderful if we had a free market where people could start doing all the things that free markets allow for. We've never seen one. We've never seen a market which is not flawed in this way. And this particular type of regulation has moved from being a temporary monopoly on certain, ideas to being a almost, at least practically, permanent monopoly. I mean, it's practical for all intents and purposes, monopoly on great swaths of our culture. So people might go on about honor rights and things like that, and I definitely support honor rights. But on the other hand, honor rights are something that we as a culture generally tend to respect, and that's kind of one of the reasons why Creative Commons has caught on so well, is because people understand attribution at a very fundamental level. But there's nothing about the way copyright works that is currently kind of supporting the further expansion of human culture. And that's the problem. I mean, I'm in favor of maybe creating something else which serves the original purpose of copyright, that is to say, furthering learning and expansion of cultural knowledge. But Ah, fuck.
Afghan shot in front. Yeah. Man,
so to cut the thing short.
Cut them off.
No, I just got shot and I'd like to finish.
I
start bleeding already.
Anyway, you were talking too long, but I thought it was an excellent moment to move on to the point. First of all, you're taking the perfect mid-Atlantic position and framing it from an almost US perspective, focusing on the utilitarian aspects of copyright. And I'd like to hear Majos, since he's the most Southern European of us. Well, Jaromil kind of emigrated from the part of Italy also known as Africa to Amsterdam, so it doesn't really count as a Southern European anymore. So I want to hear Majos' opinion on that.
I didn't know you were Libyan.
But even after we ridiculed him so much at the top, you're now not going to grant that he's Italian at all? Oh, that's outrageous.
Majo.
No, I am with this Mari.
Yes!
That was the shortest answer ever.
Yes, she doesn't get shot.
Okay. So that's also, well, then I'll count to bait you guys again. What about the thesis that copyright is one of the greatest kinds of legislation you could have in the information space, but however, the current burner system should go all pot on burner and rebuild it in a more proper way.
So would you please repeat that?
I said we should go all Pol Pot on the Berner Convention.
Oh, wow.
Are we talking about Pol Pot, the opera singer?
No, not Pol Pot, the opera singer, although he may have been a very versatile person, also have done opera as well. But.
No, there is an opera singer in the UK called Pol Pot. Yes.
Poor bastards.
I don't disagree. The Berne Convention is actually holding us back, like many international conventions, and the entire problem of post-representative democracies is actually becoming a greater burden on us. Oh, shit.
I'm running out of ammo quickly. That mind, can you throw me back my nerf? Yes, because there was this unwritten rule. I like my laws to be draconian and not to be told in advance. The use of jargon is also punishable by being shot in the face at this table. So,
poor Smarik.
Jaromil, you can be counted on to have a contrarian opinion on anything, so could you please respond to Smarik's statement?
I got confused by the shooting.
Okay,
I'm lost
chaos.
In the fog of war.
Okay, well, we'll throw in some music then.
Right. mistake this time. Right away you're going on.
Well, that was Right Away by Liquid Spray from the album Constance. I have no idea where they're from. And there we got a replacement for Jeremy Webmind. Well, hello Webmind.
Hi.
And what is your background?
I'm from the internet, the Netherlands port.
Is that a subnet?
That's a subnet.
Technically, yes. Well, a few subnets.
A bunch of subnets.
Yeah. Quite a bit, actually.
Actually, it's the most crowded namespace in under the TLDs nowadays. It fits in with the bloody post-M-sized country of end the sea.
It's interesting. We don't have the highest density of internet users, though.
Yeah, but apparently there are lots of egomaniacs in the Netherlands. So lots of the
main names. That's for sure. That's for sure.
Another person sorely missed at the table is Dimitri Kleiner. And I'm going to probably insult him by stating that free culture is depriving the artist from a working living, a working wage. What about that?
Well, I for one can say that I was given in total 170 euros today for my book by the CCC, so... And I gave my stuff away for free, so that paid for my ticket.
You actually proved
Thanks,
him
guys.
Wrong. You proved him wrong, and we can just skip that boring question.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
For the record, I just larted Walter with a copy of the Telecommunist Manifesto.
Well, this is a good thing. I already have it, and even a signed one like yours.
A but signed it's one.
Yes, it's nice. It's a Telecommunist Manifesto. The best thing is, I misplaced
book.
The bag I used to go to CCC Congress last December, and it's in there. I have no idea where it is. And so it isn't sitting snugly next to Das Kapital, The Wealth of Nations, and several translations of the Quran and the Bible. And the Little Red Book by Mao, and I'm still looking for a copy of the Little Green Book by Gaddafi.
Actually, it's not little, it's very, very big, but it's actually quite good. You would actually, if you read the Green Book, you might actually think that Gaddafi is sane. It is actually a really cool read. You know, if he went by it, it would be a wonderful country.
Well, so many ideological books are wonderful.
Oh, yeah, you're right about that one. Unusual.
What really took it for me was when the BBC went to Libya and then encountered a copy in modern Hebrew in a bookstore in Tripoli, as if anyone who would speak Ivrit would ever enter a bookstore in Tripoli without having been shot before. But we are digressing again. The discussion of
those...
Yes, I am. I'm supposed to moderate, but I'm screwing up. Becky.
Yes, someone's shot. Yeah, exactly.
Okay, I just got shot.
Who's hosting then?
Thank you. There we have a problem. Webmind will take over.
Yes. Let it be a replacement for Walter, actually. Let him be. He's good at that.
Here. No, Becky, anecdotes don't make data.
I know. I shouldn't have even raised it. I'm sorry. That's no, because I totally thought. Believe that. I mean, I agree. Anecdotes shouldn't make data. There's such a lack of like consistent data in this space. I should shut up. Seriously,
I don't think you should.
Sorry,
shut
you
up.
Were trying you're to upset me.
No, you're in a very sense. I think the notion of the artist having a right to a living wage is bollocks. It's elitist. It is a an ivory tower mentality.
Yeah.
Why should my uncle John, who literally his name is Jan in Dutch, who used to be a carpenter and make great furniture. He is now too old to do that anymore. Why should he still be paid for furniture he made 50 years ago? And why should the artist...
Nobody's actually argued in favor of that, to my knowledge.
Yeah.
The artist's right to a living wage is completely different from being perpetually paid off by a monopoly which was created many years ago.
that's an entirely different notion. You were using jargon.
Probably what's not like obvious to the listener at this point is that Shmari is saying this totally serious stuff, holding a child's pink umbrella and grinning like a maniac. Just to avoid the nerve gun.
Can I bring an interesting point, though? I mean, it makes a nice pension.
What makes a nice pension?
No, just keeping paid after you've done your work.
Well, actually, in the case of performance rights, and apparently Poland, who will be the next president of the European Union, will be pushing the performance rights extension from 50 to 95 years. And I think it was not in Harker's report, Becky, but in the other big British report on performance rights.
Mm-hmm.
On average, the artist would gain about 200 euros a year.
Well, I lobbied heavily on this issue about 3 years ago in Brussels, and at that point we worked out that the average artist would earn 50 cents a year.
So this would make for a great pension for a squatter, I think.
Yeah.
But
well, that's true. But still.
No, but the whole idea is that you promote a couple of people that look successful, and the industry then makes it possible for people to live from it. So it's an anecdote again. A couple of people are very successful, get lots of money, and everyone else.
Well,
there's
actually
quite
a bit of empirical data on that, and you end up with this generally long tail. Either it gets recouped the investments within 10 years, or it doesn't.
Yeah, the thing is, you can take Sweden as an example when it comes to artists. I'm not even Swedish, but in Sweden it's the second largest exporter of music in the world, actually, after the U.S.
It's probably because of ABBA.
Yeah, is that maybe ABBA?
No, it's not because of ABBA. It's because the Swedish people create all that shit, Backstreet Boys and Britney Spears music. All of that is produced in Sweden. Madonna is produced in Sweden.
Ace of Base.
And all pests. Yeah, all of that shit is produced in Sweden because it's probably cheaper than doing it in the US. But Sweden is making a lot of money from that. A lot of Swedish artists are very big internationally. But in Sweden, as it's a huge industry, it's very, very big. But still, there's like less than 50 people in Sweden that are artists that live from the money they make from music. But there's like 400 or 500 people in the industry that makes so much money from that, but they're not creating anything. But it's very good for them to send out an artist saying, look at this, we're making our living from this, this is how we make it, so you should buy CDs, you should give us money and all of that.
You could say this is a big industry, a con scheme, actually.
It is. It's a pyramid scheme.
So if you
Maya, really you want to say something?
I would like to add that to the question of if free culture is putting in crisis the sustainability of the artist. One is that I am a bit bored about focusing free culture only on artists. I think it's over-represented. I'm not an artist. And
hear.
I don't want to be talking about artists. I think free culture is much more than that, and we would have to also broaden our perspective in our discussions. And also in terms of one, think about the crisis of the wages system, not only in the respect to the artists, but in general to the crisis of the economical system in order to understand the specific case. And then also when talking about free culture and about the changes in the abolition of copyright or whatever the solutions we agree or not, to think about what about the researchers now with the case of Aaron Swartz. I don't know if you heard about it, that he has been put in prison because he downloaded journal articles. Or what about the librarians? What about the people who are building digital commons like the Wikipedians? Or, I mean, there are very different subjectivities which are part of the free culture. And I think what is the strongness of the free culture movement is not to focus in only on one of these subjectivities, but to be able to build bridges between them and to be able to create a common frame and common actions, because we are all affected by this regulation. So this would be my answer to broaden the perspective.
About the pyramid scheme that Peter just mentioned, I'm curious about it, because is that why the 80s music sucks so much?
Italian disco, you mean?
All this pyramid, the pyramid scheme. That was like the copyright as it was working, like in the 80s. I mean, we're talking about that. I mean, kind of sucks. I mean, with some exceptions. But
all of that was controlled from the top, so yes. Definitely.
No. So Mayo's making a very important point, and we're kind of skirting past it a bit. Just to bring up the Aaron Swartz case, because Aaron is a great guy and he's done a lot of really important things for the world, probably more so than any of the people who are engaged in the action against him. And if we think about it, researchers spend a lot of time and a lot of effort into producing papers, and they're not getting specifically paid for them. Then they are edited by other researchers who are working even harder because they're also editors and have incredible workloads. And then they're being published by people who just sit on the intermediary line and suck up all the money. And how is that fair? How is that reasonable? How can we allow that?
Yeah. Well, you're preaching to the choir here again. I mean, we know that the pharmaceutical patent system is broken. We know that the scientific publishing industry is broken. We know that the educational publication industry is broken. We know that the music industry is broken.
Where's the gun?
Yeah. I have the gun.
Thank you, GNC, to the rescue. Well,
I'd like to connect to one thought from earlier. Where you said that you want to abolish copyright, and I'm not a copyright abolitionist, but I can see that if you can set up a system which fosters creation and allows the people who create to earn their daily wage, I'm absolutely at your position. And I think this is the whole crux of the issue. It's not about artists. It's about how can we create a system where we can have people reimbursed for their work when they create value for society. And this is, I think, the general idea that we should be talking about, not about how to enforce copyright or what kind of con scam the entertainment industry is in reality.
But doesn't that refocus the debate on artists again, which is exactly what
No, this is about creation. It's not only about artists. Creation is a shitload of more. You know, it's also research in universities. They create a lot of knowledge, you know?
And I totally agree. And this is what Mario was saying as well.
Exactly.
And one of my projects is based on that idea that we have to go out of the discussion about how to make money, how to make a living for artists and all of that, and just focus on people that create. Why? How can we interact with them? How can we help them with funding to do the next thing? And I strongly believe that there's not even a problem. We already have that money today. We will have that money in the future. But we're just focusing so much on high-end culture or like the really commercial culture all the time, which it's not even culture. It's Harry Potter movies are interesting. Exactly. We were talking about ABBA.
It's not, economic to produce this really, really low amount of really low value cultural. It's really a high, production cost with very low real value.
I would respond that we shouldn't really zoom out. Yes, I'm not going to be shot. We're trying to zoom out. We actually should zoom in more. We're trying to solve the problem of creation in very disparate sectors. I mean, poetry is entirely different notion than pop music. My statement always is, as long as there are 16-year-old boys who know that the chances of getting laid are higher when they're playing in a band than extolling any ambition to become an accountant later on, there will be pop music.
No, this is just a question of marketing. You know, if there would be some marketing organization that would sell the
so many guys
would
get a guitar just to get the chicks.
There would be people who would do more poetry.
Now, I would be saying, well, the funding of creation is entirely different in different markets. For example, translation, literary translation, is bloody hard work with hardly any recognition whatsoever. And also, without the information problem you have in many creative industries, how can you recognize which one will be successful? Right now, we have art subsidies. We have civil servants known for a propensity for creativity and taking risks, judging whether you as an artist are avant-garde, risky, and creative enough, which is also bollocks.
There's a wonderful episode of Yes Minister, which kind of tackles this exact issue of civil servants determining whether to fund the opera or the local football club.
Well, this sums up. Well, Yes Minister is a wonderful documentary. Watch it. No, it is.
So I should probably.
We're not necessarily. We have a bunch of squatters.
Yeah,
and
I want to
we're still not out of time. So
we
not
have an American at the table, and there was a joke about Americans before we when we were getting
started.
It wasn't
a joke. It was a fact.
Oh,
yeah.
What was the joke?
Okay, that was the news section.
That was in the news section, but Jacob Eppelbaum, if I'm not mistaken.
That's right.
Known cyber terrorist. Introduce yourself. And
you already introduced him.
With an introduction like that, I don't think there's much I can say.
No, there's lots you can say. I was just taking the piss out of you. Sorry for that.
Okay. You said there was some joke?
Sorry, I can't remember it.
It was about the board system.
Oh,
remember?
Yeah, it's actually Jacob's been tweeting about this all day, relentlessly, and it's just flooding my stream, so I can't see anything else. Sorry.
Oh, yeah, we had an internet kill switch event in San Francisco in the last 48 hours where there was a protest, apparently, that was planned. And the idea was that the protest was about the fact that the BART police have killed about half a dozen people, including a guy they shot in the back when he was handcuffed on a platform. And so, you know, the protest was about police accountability and about how maybe the BART train system, this regional train system, should have some better accountability. And so they decided that there would be, you know, be a protest, and the BART people somehow learned about this, and they deployed riot police. And there was no protest at the point that they deployed them. And then they turned off all the internet access in these stations and killed all the cell phone cells as well. So that they could quell the protest, which is pretty clearly illegal because it's targeting a specific kind of political speech as opposed to generally. And they killed the internet on purpose. And
so basically what you're saying is that the San Francisco protests were for more, the protests were for exactly the same reason as the London protests.
No, I mean, it was a very specific thing. It was actually
police accountability. Police accountability.
The major reason for the London protest, apart from getting free PS3s and free Xbox 360s, is the fact that colored people have an extreme high propensity to die at the hands of the Metropolitan Police compared to white people.
I think that that's related. There is an irony here, which is not related just to the police. It was actually about how the train system, they sort of control the police force, so they're like an autonomous body above the police. And the protests had to do with the accountability of that body, this multi-city body, as well as the police. And the irony is that this multi-city body pulled an internet kill switch, deployed troops, and in a situation where it was about their own accountability, they did this. And it made international news, and they look like idiots. I mean, it's unbelievable how stupid they look, because there's even an anonymous operation, Op BART, which was started yesterday. I mean, like, I feel very bad for the people involved with BART right now.
There is a bad track for actually transportation companies with collaborations in police or anyway lawful pickup of people. I mean it's a bad record on the airplane in 2003. I think Munir, this activist, freedom activist from Indonesia, was killed. And people still remember it. They are still like, it was a political elimination. He was a political activist from the Kontras collective in Jakarta. And he was killed on the airplane. And there is a responsibility to be shared between, of course, the bodies that you're mentioning. Yeah. The apparatuses.
Absolutely. Yeah.